Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Greetings, humans. Welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast, where we're also humans. So it's weird that I called you humans, now that I think about it. Okay, whatever. I'm Matt. This is Joe. We do a podcast. This is that podcast. How are y'all doing? Joe, how are you doing?
I am doing okay.
Vaccine day.
Yeah, so
today or yesterday?
Yesterday, but I'm feeling it a lot more today than I was yesterday.
When's your next shot?
The 12th, so 3 weeks afterwards. I get my next one, and if I had to hazard a guess, gonna go ahead and call it now, folks. That week, probably not going to be around for the Tuesday show. My body seems to be reacting very, like, it's a good thing. Like, I'm not complaining, but it's just fascinating how quickly my body's reacting to it. Like, oh, this is a thing that shouldn't be there. It was actually kind of funny. We were raiding last night, and I was fine, and I was perfectly fine, perfectly fine, perfectly fine, perfectly fine. And then right at 11:30, it hit, and it felt like there was a very large man with a very large drill trying to come out of my skull. Got the full body aches, migraine, and I just immediately suddenly felt like super dehydrated. And then it just continued on today after I woke up. So I'm probably not going to be in great shape after the second one, but it's a good thing because it means my body is reacting to it and learning how to fight. This is a good thing.
Yeah, that's going on. I haven't got mine yet, unfortunately, but I do try to avoid people, so hopefully I'll be all right. I was going to do another one of those episodes where we jump straight to emails, because as I said in the email to Joe, honestly, everything's been kind of quiet lately. And then Blizzard dropped the Burning Crusade Classic beta dropped today. People are in there right now, Burning Crusading it up. And obviously we're not, because we're filming a podcast. Moreover, I didn't get into the beta.
I think it's funny because, like, we make this joke where, like, the minute we say that there is nothing going on, somebody at Blizzard has our house bugged. Immediately, something is going on. So,
for that matter, it's the one that really gets me is we'll do a podcast on Tuesday and Wednesday they drop something huge. It's like, what? You couldn't have dropped that yesterday. But at any rate. Yeah, that happened. We're going to talk about it a bit. I don't know that there's much to say about it other than the fact of its existence. I mean, if you haven't played the Burning Crusade, well, it's that. But it's actually, there is one thing to say I'm thinking of. If you look at the screen as we're streaming this, if you're watching us streaming it and not just listening to the recording, I have my character in Shattrath looking at Khadgar. And Khadgar is the model from, I guess, Warlords on. It's that Khadgar, which is obviously not the Khadgar we had in BC. When you go to Shattrath in the Burning Crusade beta, you're going to get to see the original Khadgar model with the long beard and everything.
Oh yeah, the old man Khadgar before he became Dadgar.
So I mean, I'm almost looking forward to seeing everything be the way it was. Not that it's changed much, but also you're not going to be playing a gnome monk because monks are like three expansions down the road. Wait a minute, Warlords, Cataclysm. No, it's Wrath, Cataclysm, then Mists, right?
Yep.
Yeah, three expansions down the road. But you know, it's just, I don't know. I don't have a lot to say about the Burning Crusade Classic other than it's kind of cool that you'll get to see original flavor Burning Crusade. It's clearly not as many changes as the old world had. Old world Azeroth got significantly changed by Cataclysm, total revamp. Stuff that's happened in Burning Crusade has just been small stuff. It's been little incremental changes, so it's not going to be as big a deal. But like I said, you're going to get to see a different Khadgar.
I'm actually really excited for Burning Crusade Classic for people to get to experience that, because it was just a completely different thing. And like, it's one of those things where we often talk about, hey, if you could experience this, it would be great. That's it. That's one of those things. It was that moment where you could play a Blood Elf for the first time, that moment where you could play a Draenei for the first time, the stories for their starting zones, which were completely new and different, the whole story of Outland in general, like going there and experiencing all those zones, seeing the broken world, finding the different portals, doing the different stories. Like, it was a really fascinating time to be a player in the game world. And I like that players are getting to experience that at least a little bit. It's not going to be exactly the same, and we know that. We know that it's never going to be exactly the same as Classic is not vanilla. It's the same thing here, right? Burning Crusade Classic is not going to be Burning Crusade, you know, the first one. But there are things to be excited about. Yeah, and SPDF points out in chat, Horde Paladins and Alliance Shaman, that was a big deal. Like, Burning Crusade was an exciting time for World of Warcraft. It was the first expansion, new areas to explore, places that we had only heard about briefly, places that we hadn't really seen in any of the RTS games, because don't forget, like, Azeroth as a whole, yeah, we've seen a bunch of those places or heard about a bunch of those places or interact with them in some capacity. Not all of them, but some of them in the RTS, so it wasn't like completely out of left field. But Outland was just something different. It was good. It was exciting. So I'm really, really happy that players are going to get to experience it at least at some degree.
Also, you're going to get to experience the last time blacksmithing was any good.
Yeah, when the last time blacksmithing was king, because the weapons that were produced back then were just so good.
Yeah, I mean, I was running around using a Lionheart. I was a tank, so I made the sword that the swordsmiths could make as the one-hander as my tanking weapon, and used it for quite some time because you keep upgrading it. But I made a Lionheart blade, and then I kept upgrading that as my DPS weapon. Right up to the end of the expansion, it was on par with the stuff that was dropping in the Black Temple. It was a little bit below it. You know, the item level was a little lower. They didn't really talk about item level back then. The DPS on it was a little lower, but it was on par. You could keep working on that. The problem was that to upgrade it, you had to be raiding pretty constantly because you had to get your hands on all the stuff that dropped in raids to upgrade your weapon.
Yeah,
so that was. If you had made that thing and you were never going to raid, you were never going to upgrade it. That's just the way it was. I just remember that mace, the two-handed mace,
mm-hmm.
that got you in so much PvP because it had a stun proc.
Yeah.
So annoying.
That was the next new hotness after Hand of Rag was no longer...
No. They had a new hotness or two since then. But Stun Herald changed the way classes spec'd.
Yep.
Paladins and warriors were just absolutely in love with it. Shaman liked it too, although by then the dual wield thing had come in, so shaman were encouraged away from using two-handed maces. Which that was a really strange thing about. I honestly remember my first time really playing a shaman was in BC. I didn't actually play a shaman in vanilla at all because I played only a little bit over on the Horde side near the end of vanilla. I had two Horde characters, one of whom was a shaman I barely ever played, an orc shaman, and the other was my Tauren warrior, who was my main for a little while. And when BC came out, I played the shaman up to 70. I got him leveled, and I was healing on him. So I didn't do much of anything with DPS on him. he was almost exclusively a healer. I didn't have an enhancement shaman until my wife was like, oh yeah, I need you to get a shaman to level 70. I was like, what? Why? And she's like, well, I need you to be able to cast Terrorism on me while we hang out in the swamp so I can increase the speed of my tame beast and tame this grim totem spirit animal before it spawns. So I literally spent like 3 days getting myself to level 70 on a character I just rolled. There was not a lot of sleep. That's how I learned how to play enhancement. And I was not good. I was not good at enhancement. I had no idea what was going on. But I just remember thinking, this class has a lot of stuff it can do, and I have no idea when to do any of it. Like, when are these totems useful? And they've never really recaptured that feeling of totems.
Since. No, they haven't. It's something that I bring up a lot.
If you played the game in vanilla or BC, totems were important. Totems were a major part of gameplay. They made your class, like, there was a lot less, like, we've seen a lot more homogenization in WoW over the years to try and balance classes out, to try and make it so that no one class really dominates. And it's failed in terms of that, because every expansion, some class is ridiculously powerful for some reason. I'm looking right at you, Demon Hunter Tanks. That bug that made you practically ignore spell damage, right there, that one. But there was a lot more variety in how classes played. And I think only druids have really retained it. I think like a lot of classes have lost it. Shaman really lost totems as a mechanic, the way totems worked in the early game. I would say even in Wrath, they started to lose it.
Yeah, so they've never really actually recaptured the feeling of totems in the game, and it's very, very frustrating, to say the very least. But that's also sort of to be expected. One of the things that Shaman, at least during like the Burning Crusade days, was that totems were a passive, right? They were almost entirely designed to be constant sources of something in the background, whether it was clearing poison and disease, whether it was healing or giving that buff to melee. They were all constant things that you drop down in a certain strategic place to give an aura effect around you, and then that was it. Around the middle of Wrath, I really would say it started to change, where they started trying to make totems a more active thing, and that's sort of where the design philosophy has come. But the problem with that is that it never really captured the same feeling as vanilla WoW or the Burning Crusade, where totems were a central part of the class as just a constant part of the class. Now they're cooldowns. They're not just a thing that exists. And the Burning Crusade was like the pinnacle of that, between all the different totems, all the different interactions you had. Like even now, like going back and doing Burning Crusade content as a current shaman, it feels weird because there are certain things you can't do. You can't clear poisons anymore as a shaman, so you just can't clear half the debuffs that existed in Burning Crusade, because literally half of them were poison, because the toolkit is just so wildly different. It's so being able to go back and see it is it's like that time capsule that we keep talking about. It's cool. To me, at least, it's cool from a shaman perspective, at the very least.
Okay. But that's okay. That's pretty much what we're going to talk about for that. I don't think other than me saying, you know, it's still not any good because it doesn't have Titan's Grip, I don't see how there's anything else to really talk about. Titan's Grip changed the warrior class for me in a way that made it, before Titan's Grip to after Titan's Grip, it's such a sea change that it's impossible for me to really explain to you how it changed it. To the point where, you know, people to this day, you know, balance for DPS warriors has always been about trying to balance the original playstyle of single-minded Fury, which wasn't called that. It was just the way Fury warriors worked, to the new playstyle of Titan's Grip. And I think it's failed because Titan's Grip should have been basically made a warrior-wide ability, and Prot warriors should have been tanking with two-handers, and Arms and Fury should both have been dual-wielding two-handers, and that's just the way that the class should work.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't done, and so it's always been this back and forth. Regardless, we don't have time for that, because literally the show can't be Matt rants about warriors for an hour, and so...
I mean, we could. If you
want that show, by all means, feel free to hit us up on Patreon. But I think we're going to move on and talk about them, their emails we got, because we got a few, and there's some stuff to talk about there. And maybe maybe we'll also get to some of your questions in the chat. We try to. Sometimes we succeed, sometimes we fail. But if you've got a question for the podcast, you can send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com, the subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for the show. Or you can just say it's for either podcast, and then, you know, it falls down to a series of Rube Goldbergian traps where I'm constantly trying to push Joe into a pool of, like, sleeping ass or what have you, so that he doesn't notice I'm stealing all the questions. I actually managed to not steal any questions this week. I was very proud of myself.
We were very good this week.
But if you've got a question, but you don't want to email it for whatever reason, you don't like email, you've never learned how, you've just secretly always believed people you email are going to come to your house at night. Well, we're not gonna. I'm lazy and I don't want to come to your house. I'm not leaving my house.
Hey, in three weeks I might be willing to. Who knows?
But regardless, you can use our Discord server as well. We've got a queue. Patreon Q and podcast questions channel, and I never get that name right. I don't know why the problem is, but you can hit that up if you're a patron. We love getting questions from our patrons, and more importantly, you all keep the site going, so we like to give you first crack at asking us questions. Or you can go to our Q questions channel, which I actually took two questions from this week because, you know, hey, why not? Joe reads them for us, so if you don't mind, Joe.
Not in the slightest. So the first one, hello, watchers. Lord Soth here. With all the focus I've had on Diablo lately, I got an itch to explore Diablo 2 again, and I was wondering, do you know if there are going to be any quality of life upgrades to the resurrected version? There's a few things I can think of in terms of UI shortcut features, like right-clicking to equip sell things. It'd be nice if the stash could be account-wide this time instead of character-dependent. We've seen Blizzard its growth and understanding about this concept with WoW Classic, and I'm wondering how strict you think they might be to preserving it detail for detail. Thanks for all you guys do.
They specifically said that the stash is coming to Diablo 2, because ultimately what happens in Diablo 2 is people were just making bank characters, and rather than forcing people to make bank characters, they're just going to make the stash be account wide and just be done with it. So they specifically mentioned that. They talked about, in most cases, they're not going to change the game. Like, their philosophy is only change it if there's a specific reason to do so and try and preserve as much as possible. Because this game is built on the back end of Diablo 2.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually using the Diablo 2 code for this. And then they're adding graphic stuff on top of it. So when you play Diablo 2 Resurrected, you are playing Diablo 2. Code is the same in most cases. The changes that they're making, like the stash change, they're going to be few and far between, and they're going to be aimed at quality of life. They've made a few changes just based on the fact that this is going to be the first Diablo 2 port that's ever been made, ever. Diablo 2 only existed previously as a PC version. There was no console version of Diablo 2. There was only the PC, and technically the Mac version was the PC version. Same game. Remember, you could install it on either from the same disks. This version will be PC and console, and because it's going to be a console edition as well, it needs to have controller support.
You know what's interesting about that? Wasn't the original Diablo on, like, PlayStation?
Yes, it was. That's where I played it.
I totally forgot that Diablo 2 was not on a console.
Never made it to a console. Nope. It was only on PC and Mac. And technically Mac is a PC. So, yeah. But because they're doing that, because they are porting it to consoles, there are small changes being made to make the consoles, like, work. Like, there are certain spells that are targeted in Diablo, like the Barbarian's Leap or the Sorceress's Teleport or something, where you move a random... You move a distance in a random direction based on the direction you were moving. With the controller, that's they don't target an area on the ground, they just move you in certain places. So it does change certain things to make controller support viable. But in general, if you play Diablo 2 right now, you will be getting the same gameplay experience that you'll be getting in Diablo 2 Resurrected. They're not changing the balance on mobs. They're not making certain boss fights harder or easier. Any changes they make are just going to be changes like, well, you know, we want people to be able to see the screen more. So we've changed the fidelity of the graphics or what have you.
Mm-hmm,
it's mostly graphical updates and little things like the aforementioned stash that you meant, that you already asked about. They are otherwise, it's the same game.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm kind of okay with the idea of like that being the case, because I think that's what everybody wanted with Warcraft 3, right? Like, they wanted some quality of life stuff and mostly the game to still be Warcraft 3.
I think with Warcraft 3, the problem was that when they were talking about it, stuff got said like, oh, maybe we'll do this.
Yeah.
The devs were definitely just thinking maybe they could do it, not, and, you know, they're definitely going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think here,
unfortunately, yeah.
I was going to say, I think here the expectation is being set properly where it's like, no, it's going to be Diablo 2 with a prettier it's going to look prettier and have some quality of life stuff like the stash. And I think that's fine. I think that's perfectly A-okay. I don't think there's really anything else to add to that one, unless you can think of anything specifically else they called out.
Nothing really comes to mind. They did talk about it for a little bit, but I don't remember if they talked about anything else specific.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll get some more information about that, because like, I'm really looking forward to the technical alpha and beta for Diablo 2, because I mean, I still have the Diablo skull shard with the USB stick with Diablo 2 installed on it, sitting on my desk, the one that came with the Diablo 3 collector's edition, because I love that game. I really do. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Our next question. Hi, guys. Not for the Lore Watch podcast. Matt, you're welcome. I was wondering, what do you think is the rate of Anima Blizzard intends us to collect per week? Just curious what would be the expected average. Also, what are the opinions to gear up for a mostly solo player like myself? I don't do Mythic Dungeons or Raids, just basically LFR, Torghast, World Quests, etc. Currently wearing 197 Covenant gear set, a 235 Legendary, and some other assorted gear. I simply cannot seem to get any gear above 194 from any of the sources. I'm starting to get bored with the grind without any gear power advancements. Thanks, Luluna.
Well, I mean, to start off with, I think right now they intend you to gather at least 1,000.
Yeah, like, at least they're trying to entice you to it, right?
Yeah, but I don't know that Anima collection will remain the same as we go through patches. I would not be surprised if in patch 9.1, the Anima balance changes drastically, because we're going to get a whole new quest hub. And as a result, you know, we might have access to more Anima. So they might. Someone's pointed out that if you really were trying to be a completionist with the things you could get from Anima, if you were trying to get all of it and boost everything, it would literally take you like 1,000 weeks.
Yeah.
Like it's not feasible at current levels. So it's quite possible that as the expansion progresses, the amount of Anima we get will expand so that we can do things faster or better. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right now, I'd argue for 1,000 is what they're intending.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that I think they were pretty open about from the very beginning when it came to this expansion. Like, they flat out said multiple times, hey, this isn't going to be like artifact power or some of the other ones where like you just grind it endlessly to begin with. I think their intention was that around that 1,000, maybe a little bit more per week, to like drop in, drop out, and not make you feel like you had to constantly grind. But I know that there's, like, looking at how things are priced, it definitely seems like there's going to have to be a shift at some point. Like, we're going to get to that point, maybe next patch or whatever, where we see an increase in it, would be my guess, because quote unquote, and I'm air quoting here with my fingers, folks, the drought is over, or at least stemmed, so Anima becomes a little more freely available. They've already done some things to help improve that, like raids drop more now, so, but I know this person in this particular case is saying that they're not raiding, which is the second part of that question, which is gearing up for a solo player.
If you want to get gear above a certain point as a solo player, I'm going to just be upfront with you. The only real viable way is to PvP.
Yeah.
And even then, the PvPing is completely solo, which means you don't do a ton of, you know, it's assuming you're not doing any raided battlegrounds or arenas, because that's not solo. The come out of conquest you can get is extremely limited, which means that you'll be able to maybe, like, after a few weeks, you'll be able to get one piece of conquest gear. And then the process of upgrading it's going to be slow.
Yep.
But that's pretty much it. Like, you're talking, you're at 197 to what, like, you've got your 235 legendary. Everything else is like at 197 or so. And, you know, in terms of what World Quest will drop for you, you've hit the top end of what World Quest will drop. They don't go above 194.
Yep.
You can get like a 203 to a 207 piece from the emissary things. They're not emissaries anymore, but the callings. When you get one of the purple bags from a calling, it has a chance to drop an item that's like a 207. I've got one piece on my main that's 207 from a calling. That can happen, but it's extremely rare. So that's basically it. You are at close to the top.
Yeah.
For a completely solo player. There just isn't much else for you. Now, keep in mind, 9.1 is coming, and 9.1 will likely have new sources of gear for you. But in terms of right now, as things stand right now, you are at pretty close to the top in terms of power for a completely solo player, because they don't intend solo players to get like two raid levels. Like you're at normal raid gear. You're pretty close to it. Normal raid gear is item level 200. You're at, or you're like within three item levels of it for your set, for your various set pieces. Your non-set pieces are six item levels away from it. That's about where they intend you to be.
Yeah. I mean, not to take too much of a sidetrack here, but like this is kind of a sore spot for me, because even as we talk about this a lot, and I'm curious how you folks at home feel about this as well, because I see some rumblings here and there on Twitter and some disgruntled messages in the forums and stuff like that. But I'm curious how you feel as far as players and your various aspects, how gear is going for you. Because me personally, I feel like it's not just an anima drought we're in. I feel like there's a lot of gear caps that you hit very, very quickly in the current content, in the current patch, that just feel, I feel like you hit them quicker than you have in most of the other previous patches or expansions, at least a level one. And I was commenting about this in guild, I want to say a couple weeks ago. Liz is in chat, she can keep me honest, so is Molly. I think it was last week Wednesday I was saying something about it, where like it feels like we hit that point where it's like, okay, you're done until the next content patch, where we adjust things way quicker than we did even in Battle for Azeroth. Like, I don't remember feeling like this quickly in Aldir at all. So it's weird, because I think something's just off. And as far as like solo players go, I feel like they got a shorter end of the stick this time around when it came to gearing options, because the Covenant stuff doesn't drop gear like the old school emissaries did. Not nearly as often. It does now ish, but it definitely didn't for a long time. World Quest, really, I'm not seeing a whole lot of useful things. There's things that will pop up that, yes, it's gear, but maybe it's not the right gear. Like, I see a lot of like versatility haste gear pop up, and that's not what I'm looking for. I need that crit. So like some of that feels like the gear might be there, but like it's just not for you. And then even raid gear feels light, right? So even if like Luluna, even if you were in a raid group or a pug group that was doing this stuff to try to find gear, like, I think you hit your cap. Like, I think you're right around I think it was right around that point when I started feeling there's not much else for me to do quite yet, even with raiding. Right. And I think weapons are a part of that. I think trinkets are a big part of that. Like, the trinket stuff has been fixed a little bit, but I think that feeds into it. But yeah, so I think unfortunately you're kind of at that point where unless you start PvPing, there's really not a whole lot you can do. Even if you start pug raiding, you're just about where that cap's going to lead off. So I'm hoping that they make some adjustments. I'm actually holding out hope that they're looking at this and looking at how players feel and seeing if they can adjust it and how gear is delivered. And we've seen that they've done that in the past, right? Like in Battle for Azeroth, when we had new content or new tier levels, there were things that were put in place to help throughout that expansion get more gear. Like Bethic gear is a really good example of like, it may not have been the best gear, but it was an avenue to upgrade, right? It was an avenue to still have something to look forward to. So, I don't know. We'll see. Anything else to add to that one?
I will just add that one of the things, by tying the quality of gear to your renown with your Covenant, it means that for a lot of the time, like your, until you get your renown up, your world quest gear was inferior just because you didn't have your renown up high enough yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that double whammy of your, you know, the gear that you drop gets to a certain item level based both on the gear you already have and on your faction meant that it was much slower than the way gearing worked in Battle for Azeroth. And keep in mind that the reason gearing is working in Shadowlands the way it is because people complained that it was too easy to get gear in Battle for Azeroth. And this is something that happens throughout the run of World of Warcraft, and it's, I haven't talked about it in a long time, but it's this. The greatest enemy to players having fun in World of Warcraft is always going to be other players in World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
They will complain about anything. There will always be some reason why some system is bad. You could be in the middle of enjoying the heck out of the system, and somebody else will hate it, and it will be the bane of their existence. And it's always going to end up with a pendulum swing in the other direction. That's going to kick you right in the teeth. So if you're wondering who to blame, it's other players.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, and it's always going to be that way. I don't have a solution to it. I've been playing World of Warcraft since 2004. So, you know, my World of Warcraft experience is now in high school, and it's surly, and it doesn't come home at night, and it won't tell me what it's doing. All I can say is I hope that 9.1 brings you more avenues. I hope that more stuff comes along so you don't feel, no one likes feeling bored. I got you on that one. So, yeah.
All right. Well, our next question comes from Verdigris, our undead Maldraxxi mage friend. With many bosses being generally large things walking around, could rogues, as easiest class example, just have the ability to climb up any boss, hold on tight, and merrily stab away? I think generally more verticality without swimming could be fun and make melee a little less impossibly crowded. That's a really tricky question. Because now you're starting to get into accessibility territory, right?
Well, also, I'm going to say, before you get on the accessibility thing, which I'm sure is very important, like, I'm serious, I want you to talk about it, I'm just going to say this. As somebody who's never played a rogue, I'll be bleeped if you guys get to have fun. We hate you. Everybody hates rogues. Just accept it. We all hate you.
I don't hate rogues. I just never see them. Nobody ever plays them.
You're not melee. No. It's no fun for you. See what I said before about other players being the enemy of fun? Here I am, being the enemy of your fun. Because it wouldn't be fun for me to get to watch you do that. It's like, it's bad enough that druids can do everything all the time. No. I'm drawing the line here. Rogues climbing up the back of the... We're not turning the game into Shadow of the Colossus just for rogues. If you're climbing on them, everybody should get
to climb. I feel like I should interrupt you and point out that Verdigris wasn't calling it out just for rogues, just using rogues as an example.
Yeah.
we woke a sleeping giant, folks.
But in all sincerity, I think Joe's point of accessibility, which he's about to make, is pretty valid just from a personal perspective. So go for it.
Yeah, so like this is one of those things that I think a lot of people don't really think of, is that accessibility becomes an issue with things like verticality. Depth perception is hard in these games. It's hard to nail properly and present in a way that most players can interact with. And whether that's because you have astigmatism or something else that means that you can't really judge it, that becomes problematic. Then you have things like jumping puzzles. There's a very limited number of them in the game right now. There is a reason there is a very limited number of them in game right now. And it's because there is a non-trivial number of people who have difficulty doing it. Like, one of the reasons that I think, and I'll call out Guild Wars 2 for this. I love Guild Wars 2 as a game. I think that its art style is very, very pretty. I think that it made a lot of sense for gameplay-wise with what it did. But one of my biggest gripes with it was also one of the things that I love the most about it. Two sides of that same coin. It was jumping puzzles. They were everywhere. And in order to get to certain places, and in fact, in order to complete certain dungeons in that game, you had to be good at jumping puzzles. You could not cheat them. You could not have people help you get through them. And in fact, they were set up in such a way that other players in your group could cause you to fail. Now let's transport that to WoW. Those players would likely stop playing if that became a thing. If that became the way these melee classes worked, that would potentially alienate that large player base. There's a reason why verticality bosses that have existed in this game use the swimming mechanic. The swimming mechanic is easy as far as players to grasp. I push one button, I go up. I push one button, I go down, and everything else is roughly the same. That's an easy thing to grasp and doesn't require you to have crackerjack reflexes like Jack Burton. It doesn't require you to have the exact visual depth acuity to do this and still have some of those fun verticality bosses. We just had one in Battle for Azeroth, at least one, when we started talking about the giant anglerfish, right? There was a lot of verticality in that, but it was a swimming fight and it made sense. And I don't remember hearing people complain about not being able to do it because of the verticality. The other thing to also keep in mind, too, is beyond accessibility, this game has traditionally not dealt with the Z-axis very well. And this is a hill I will die on. I remember points of this game where it wouldn't register the Z-axis at all. And if you were off the ground, it wouldn't register you in any other motion, because the Z-axis then overrode X and Y, so forward, horizontal and lateral movement, to the point where you would still count as in the ground or in effects until you landed somewhere else and the game could reposition you. I think that's gotten better. It's been a while since I've paid attention to it, but traditionally, non-swimming verticality has not been handled well in this game. That's not to say that this is not something they could maybe experiment with a little bit or see if there's a way that they could expand that out. But I think that that's safe. I don't know the way to do that that's safe. And I have a feeling that it might not be worth the development time on their end to figure that out, because you need to make sure that it's something everybody can do, especially with boss fights. And anybody who has a disability that raids, I see you. If you overcome your disability and do those fights, fantastic. I'm here for it. If you enjoy doing that, I'm here for it. I don't want to see things added to this game that potentially takes that away from them. And I think that's a big factor here. So, at least in my opinion.
So. Yeah, I do think that, you know, my, you know, bitterness aside, if you start developing fights where you have to have people traveling up and down a giant boss to do damage to it, I do think you're going to see a lot of people. I had problems when my disability was coming up and I was realizing I was losing my eyesight. It was when we were in Mists of Pandaria. We were doing what was not yet Mythic, because Mythic didn't exist yet, but the highest difficulty of Siege of Orgrimmar. And there's a fight where you basically, it's the Norushen fight where he has you prove that you can be trusted to go in and fight the Shah of Pride by doing another fight just beforehand, the way bosses do. And as a tank, I had to go downstairs into another room and fight these mobs. And it was almost impossible for me to see them. Mm-hmm. And you had to stand in something. And I just remember the fight being astonishingly frustrating for me. And it made me quit tanking.
I mean, we have a lot of that even now. Like, there's a lot of stuff in Nathria that's hard for players to visualize and see. Like, it's not to take away from your eyesight problem or anything like that, but, like, even folks without it have difficulty with some of that as well. Like, I don't know. Like, it's one of those things where I would welcome new mechanics as long as it doesn't alienate or take something away from somebody. So, sorry about that, Matt. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, sir. It's fine.
I think we can move on to our next one then from Falrin, sure. Which is a question for the podcast. Paladins, necromancers, or a close variation of either are, for I think obvious reasons, the top contenders for the 5th Diablo 4 class. But what if both are correct, and in fact we are getting a Diablo take on the Death Knight class? How would that class work in the Diablo setting? Could it have a different name? Would they be paladins who lost their faith and turned to necromancy as a better means to protect Sanctuary, or could they have a different origin that's not so mostly just Warcraft DKs grafted onto the Diablo setting?
I mean, one hopes they have a better origin than that, because that would be weird. I mean, obviously they could do it. They've got necromancy established. You could very easily just say that an order of necromancers decided that for whatever reason, the priests of Rathma weren't doing the job of maintaining the balance properly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could very easily justify that, you know, some necromancers, heck, if you really wanted to, you could say, well, the PC necromancer, the Nephilim necromancer from Diablo 3 created a trend amongst necromancers to want to get more involved in the world as part of their whole keeping balance thing, and that they don't trust what's going on with Necromancers now, especially if that is Rathma, who's helping Lilith come back. They might have decided, turns out that we can't trust Rathma, but we're going to take what we learned and use it to defend Sanctuary our way, and they start picking up really big swords. I mean, that's certainly one possibility. You could go in a lot of different ways with it. I don't know that they're going to do that, just because it is not something... technically speaking, necromancy in Diablo has been pretty heavily restricted to this one group and this one flavor. So I don't know that they're going to do that. They certainly could decide to, if that's what they wanted to do.
There is the other option, and we talked about this on Lore Watch, though, and I thought you made a very good point over there. And if folks at home haven't listened to it yet, highly recommended. We've been going through the Diablo lore for each of the classes, and we got into talking about Crusaders and Paladins last Sunday, or last recording at this point.
2 days ago.
2 days ago for us. Time is weird, folks. It's wibbly wobbly. But you made a really good point. Like, Templars seem like a really good way to accomplish some of that same goal. And I'll point this out. Like, the Crusader had a lot of things like summoning spirits or power from whatever it was to come and help fight, whether it was spectral horses or other spectral crusaders or things like that. And that always struck me as almost slightly necromantic in a way. Like, what if you applied that to the Templars, or that became more of some of that core class with it? What if those Templars had something where they would, you know, drudge up the ancestors or drudge up the fallen Templars to fight at their side in that similar type of way? They would have sort of that same flavor. What potentially couldn't they? Where they're almost like a Death Knight in that way, except they're not actually raising corpses. They're just summoning spirits to do the same bidding, the same thing. And then you have the Paladin effect. You have the Knight effect, where they're still in armor. They're still swinging weapons. That would be really cool. Or maybe give them a black magic bar or something, or call it something else than black magic. But like, they could do some interesting things potentially with that class to maybe accomplish something similar to a Death Knight.
Honestly, I'm waiting for the cowards to have the courage to bring back the Witch Doctor as a knight figure, the Witch Knight. You know, you show up in big
Eldritch
plate
armor. Eldritch Knight.
Nope, Witch Knight. You show up in big plate armor and start raining frogs down on people. Go for it. Be nuts. Just take everything about the Witch Doctor that, you know, I feel really bad for the Witch Doctor as a class, in that it feels like it is the Diablo class that got the least love. To the point where they developed Necromancers for Diablo 3, who immediately came in, kicked over the table, took the Witch Doctor's lunch, and ate it right in front of the Witch Doctor, while he was still trying to get up from getting his table kicked over. And I get why. I get why the Necromancer felt more... you know, if you played Diablo 2, the Necromancer had that whole thing going on, and it definitely felt more Diablo than the Witch Doctor, which is very much a hodgepodge class of weird stuff. But I definitely also feel it would be kind of interesting to see. The thing is, if we're going to get an order of quote-unquote holy warriors in Diablo 4, there does need to be something. I don't think it necessarily needs to be like Death Knights again or anything like that. Because quite frankly, I do feel like that's not a particularly Diablo-y concept. And I would prefer anything like that would basically be a necromancer, ultimately. It's just a necromancer in heavier armor when you come right down to it. But I do think it would be interesting if we got a variant of Paladins that dealt more with what's been going on in Sanctuary for the past, at this point, 30 years. Diablo 2 is, at the point of we get to Diablo 4, we're talking like 30, 35 years ago. And the world has just been getting steadily worse ever since. Diablo 2 is a tipping point where the Sanctuary has just been getting worse and worse ever since. It hasn't gotten better yet. And that's kind of the point of Diablo. Things just keep getting worse. But you have to reach a certain point narratively in the structure of this thing where somebody, you know, you're a hero now. You go forth to challenge the darkness and fight it. So some variant of Paladin that does more of that, whether it be like the Crusader or the Templar or, you know, this new Death Knight-y fighter, that could be interesting. Honestly, kind of feel like you could have a class that has talent choices that make it the classic Paladin, or make it more like a Crusader, or make it more like a Templar, or make it like, you know, death obsessed. That'd be kind of fun. But I have no idea what they're going to do in Diablo 4. This is all just us speculating. internally, they probably already have the class done.
Yeah, likely.
You know? At least by done, I don't mean done.
But like designed, like the concepts, they have it storyboarded or at least like a roadmap for it.
Yeah, they know what they're going to do, and they've probably done a significant amount of the work on it already. So this is all cool, and I do think you're right in that it could be very interesting to have a kind of necro paladin. Could be pretty interesting, but I don't know what they're going to end up with.
Yeah. Next question. So why do we find ourselves in such deep life and death stake stories every expansion? We used to maybe have to deal with a single dragon or elemental lord. Now we're breaching the bounds of death itself. What's next? Is WoW just doomed to keep getting bigger, and should it? That is actually a really good question. We talk about this a lot too with like D&D stuff, and we have in the past. Like, there's a certain element from power creep, I guess would be the best way to put it. Think about it in terms of who we are as like characters in the game universe. There's a certain amount of sense that is made with the stakes getting bigger and bigger. I mean, we used to have to go and get a large, almost army of folks, of heroes, more powerful than a standard soldier to go and deal with threats. And that's like the 40-man raids of vanilla WoW, right? Then we weren't in need of so many. And now, again, not in need of so many, where we are that powerful. We've stood toe-to-toe with titans. We've stood toe-to-toe with dragon aspects and, at this point now, deities. There is a certain element of the long-forgotten days of helping farmers clear out Quillbor, even though we still do that in certain aspects. But I guess that is a really good question of, should it keep getting bigger? Should it keep always being life and death? And I think you and I talked about this, oh God, months ago on the Lore Watch podcast. I'd love to see an expansion or a time where that's not the case, where maybe it's about exploration instead, where we know that Azeroth is a larger planet than we can possibly see right now. We know that the globes are not accurate, that there might be more out there that we haven't experienced yet. And in fact, like they've already hinted at maybe there's more out there to discover. Why not have an expansion about that, where it's not life and death, where it's about learning more about the world, where it's about exploring more of Azeroth? I could very easily see something like that happen. You could have plenty of conflict. You could wake up old gods and, you know, sleeping entities and interact with things that are on the level of Loa that don't want us to be in these distant lands or whatever the case is. You can have plenty of conflict. That's not a problem. But maybe something that doesn't feel like, oh, if we don't do this, everything is going to explode and everybody's going to die or whatever. Maybe there is time or a case to walk back from that. What do you think?
I'm not sure what you're asking me when I think. Like, do I think that's a good idea? Is that what you're asking?
Well, do you think it's gotten to life and death?
I'm the guy that argued this in the first place, that we should have a vacation. So I don't, on the one hand, I don't necessarily feel like it's gotten too big. Everyone keeps doing that. Like, I've seen a few posts. I see a post on our site by Andrew about that.
Yeah, Red actually commented in chat that it was from his, yeah.
And I don't agree with it. I think it is a bad take. So Red, straight up, bad idea. I don't agree with you. But you'll get used to it. I used to do this with Adam all the time.
And me all the time too, still.
I don't have that problem. To a certain degree, I feel like if I want to go back to the way things used to be, I have options to do that. I can level a new character. I can play WoW Classic. I don't feel like World of Warcraft should be like worried that its storytelling has gotten too big or too cosmic. That being said, it doesn't always have to be like, you don't want a symphony to just be continuously ascending notes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't want music to just be like getting faster and faster and faster and faster and faster and faster until you get to the end. That's not music. That's a chase. That's like, you know, the monster is behind you in a movie music.
No, that's not a music. That's a meme at that point. But yeah.
Yeah. I would be okay with there being storylines, expansions, what have you, that were just about, you know, hey, let's go explore some stuff. Let's go see what's going on over here. What, you know, that isn't like the world is under, you know, continuous threat of, the world hasn't stopped being under continuous threat of destruction since Wrath of the Lich King.
Yeah.
Every expansion, you know, something is going to wipe us all out if we don't act now. It just gets to the point where it's like, could we have one expansion where nothing is raining from the sky, no hordes are anywhere, nothing, just can I have 5 minutes on it? Like, I just need to take a nap, guys. I need to take a nap. This is too much. Khadgar got to F off and take a nap, like, you know, since the end of Legion. Why don't I get to take a nap? You know? Simultaneously, I am not worried that WoW is getting too big. I'm not worried that the scope is too big or that my character is too important to do central to the narrative. That's not an issue for me. I'm not one of those people who, like, misses the quieter, smaller stories. But at the same time, I do kind of understand where that mentality comes from. Because, you know, eventually, in order for the big, epic moments to matter, there has to be something to contrast them with.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been having this continuous drunken reeling towards disaster since Wrath of the Lich King.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of, like, I hate to say, like, feet on the ground moments, but there hasn't really been any in a long, long time.
I mean, if you look at Warlords of Draenor, at least that was some other world was going to get itself destroyed. But it ultimately ended up being bad for us, too. And it just keeps coming back to this feeling of, couldn't we have an expansion where we just show up someplace and see what happens? I mean, if you think about the original game, the original character experience you had as a player, it was very much, I'm going to go over there and see what's going on. And then you'd see what was going on and you'd do all the stuff. And then you'd move on to the next place and see what was going on. And that's always the interesting contrast between leveling and endgame in World of Warcraft is you always go from, hey, let's see what's going on over there. And it feels almost episodic. It almost feels like, you know, on this episode of, you know, My Paladin, you go to this place and find out, oh, hey, there's plague here and there's weird monsters over there. Yeah, okay. And then when you get to, like, your max level, suddenly everything is about big threat in this place. And expansions really have this problem. Expansions have almost, you know, there's never been an expansion where there wasn't a single unifying big bad at the end. The closest we got to that was Battle for Azeroth because it switched gears.
Yeah.
But N'Zoth was really there the whole time. We just didn't know about it right away. So there has yet to be an expansion where you just, you know, you get to max level and there's more exploring to do and there's more adventures to have. And none of it is, you know, at the end of it, the world's not going to blow up. Like, you know, it would occasionally be nice if the end of the expansion didn't feel like, okay, I wish I didn't know this. Mm-hmm. Now I have mm-hmm. to stop the world from blowing up again. So yeah, I'm of two minds about it, but I generally feel like we could definitely use that vacation expansion.
Yeah,
I definitely would be down for that.
I would not be upset if that happened, but yeah. Our next question, and this might wind up be the only one we have time for. We'll see if we can get through the last two here, is from Vulcan. Do we really get a free 58 boost when TBC launches, or is it a Mandela effect? Because I can't be the only one that remembers that, but the sentence once one paid boost per account makes me think I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure that it was kind of the group assuming that it was free. I think we remember talking about this in work chat when they announced the Burning Crusade, but I'm pretty sure it's one paid boost per account. They never said anything about a free boost. Am I wrong?
As far as I know, the way it was stated, you'll get a boost to 58 if you start on a Burning Crusade Classic server. So here we are establishing that we don't actually know for sure because I don't have the thing in front of me.
If you in chat know, please, by all means, yell it out because I don't remember hearing anything about a free one. And again, that could be me just misremembering because there was a lot of stuff going on during BlizzCon. So, but yeah, we'll come back to that if anybody in chat pipes up. But yeah, no idea otherwise. And then our last question is from Riptides. Question for Q or Blizzard Watch Podcast. With the new player level experience being a great trainer for new players, it feels like dumping them into BFA right after is a mistake. I got my brother to try playing and things were going well. I had to explain a ton of stuff to him, though, until we queued for the first dungeon available at level 10, Freehold. Mechanically, this was a big spike in complexity and was very frustrating for him and some of the other new players in our group. Do you think WoW should have an entire leveling experience dedicated to new players to get them to 50? What might that look like? And Riptides. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, do you have any thoughts on this one, Matt?
Yes, but unfortunately you distracted me with that other thing, so I was looking at that. So, Honestly, I don't know that I think it's an. The thing about that is the new player leveling experience going straight to BFA. I did it once, but I do think that you're right that the BFA dungeons are. They're at the tail end of World of Warcraft design. They're the second most recent expansion. There is, and Freehold, I'll be up front. I hate Freehold. There is too much crap happening on a pole in Freehold. There are too many weird abilities. There's too much stuff where if you stand in a circle, you'll get annihilated. Just no. Like, that is not something I'd want to put a new player into. It is not designed for new players. So he's got a point. Absolutely, you got a point that that's dungeon wise. Any Battle for Azeroth dungeon is going to be a shock to the system if your previous dungeon experience is the training wheels dungeon at the end of the new leveling experience,
which is not a bad experience. It's just not a complete one if you're going straight into Battle for Azeroth.
No, it's you go from here is a bare bones sketched out dungeon where the other people don't really mess up and you don't have to think about it to here is one of the more complicated mechanical experiences you're going to have. And it's with real people who can do all sorts of things you don't understand or expect. No. And Freehold is just layout wise. It's just, it is a mess. It is a hot mess, guys.
It's easy to get lost. There's a lot of random mechanics to pay attention to. There's a lot of trash that could kill you.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. The trash is way worse in Freehold than any of the bosses. And there are places where you will literally be running into so many trash packs because it's similar to my least favorite dungeon from Warlords. I want to say Evergreen, but Evergrove? Is that what it's called? Evergrove?
Yeah, Everbloom.
Everbloom, yeah. In that it's a big open space and there's multiple paths you could take, but they're all wrong. And if you try and get the tricky and skip trash bowls, half the time you're going to end up getting free trash bowls. There's just, you're right in that it is a big spike in complexity. I don't know that you'd really be better off, like, if you made it so that you could run, if you could do the opening thing and then just run the original dungeons. I don't know if it'd be that much better, because I remember Zul'Farak. To this day, Zul'Farak is just awful. For much of the same reasons. Have you ever done Zul'Farak?
Yep.
You remember doing Zul'Farak? Zul'Farak wasn't fun.
No, not until you understood what was going on.
Yeah, and that's your problem here is you got somebody who doesn't understand what's going on. Yep. And it's not their fault. They're a new player.
Yep.
I do think that this is one of the weird things about what they've done here. I do love that 1-10 leveling experience is really nice.
I think it's very good.
Yeah, but it is absolutely gentle. And the way they've done the World of Warcraft, like everything else from 10 to 50, is thrown in the hopper. And you get stuff from like back in the day when people had no idea to now when people have all the idea. So you're expected to have all the idea. And it's a total, I'm just glad people can't get the original version of Sunken Temple. Can you imagine putting some poor new player through level 10 Sunken Temple?
I mean, it's better now. At least there's guides that they could look up online. But like, I remember the very first time trying to figure out what the heck was going on in Sunken Temple, and I had no idea. My significant other is literally just said, "Oh God," under her breath as I said,
"Sunken Temple, man." Or imagine you're level 10. And you decide, all right, well, we're going to do the Burning Crusade because that's the oldest current content in the game. We're going to do that because it'll probably be the most mechanically simple. And you got Steam Vaults for your first dungeon. Steam Vaults is just a nightmare of trash pulling. There's that whole room you have to like skate around the edge and there's trash everywhere. And you can easily get 5 pulls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, I don't know the answer to this. I don't have a big, well, in order to solve this, they should do X. No, the problem is that you're trying to take like nearly 2 decades of gameplay of various design philosophies and cram it all into like one thing that you can play like 10 to 50 in any way you'd like to. I don't know that any of those expansions would be better than BFA. I do definitely get why you're saying Freehold is a problem though. Absolutely. I don't disagree, but would the Motherlode be better for a new player? I don't think so.
No, I think that would have as much death and frustration.
I think a lot of the dungeons from the last 3 expansions would be like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, I literally, I'm level 10 and you want me to run this.
Yeah. And like, I don't know if there's a good answer, right? Like, I'm thinking about it and sort of short of creating a whole new experience to bridge that gap. I don't know if there's an easy way just because of how mechanically mature the game has become over the course of these 16 plus years of existence at this point, because we've come a long way.
We are at the point now where explaining raid fights to people, we explain them by means of other raid fights.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, absolutely.
If you think about this in terms of contextuality, what it means is that we've built up a language and a vocabulary about the gameplay experience of World of Warcraft that one can only relate to by using other World of Warcraft experiences to explain it, or other games.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, when you're like, I remember playing when I played Guild Wars 2, a lot of the Guild Wars 2 stuff was explained to me by means of EverQuest. I'm sitting there going, I didn't play EverQuest. You can't give me EverQuest to explain this. World of Warcraft has become that for itself, where you're actually explaining World of Warcraft to someone by means of older World of Warcraft, which they didn't play. You are right. It is a problem. I don't know how to fix it.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's an elegant answer. That said, I do think it is a problem that would warrant some time should it be possible to give attention to it. So, like, maybe Blizzard will address that at some point. Otherwise, it might wind up being a case where, unfortunately, that gap remains, and it just winds up being a Band-Aid ripoff moment, but that's almost kind of what it feels like. It's almost like getting thrown into the deep end immediately and seeing if you can swim, kid. So, but
there's also a point to be made here that whilst it may not be the ideal solution, one solution is possibly not to run dungeons until you're closer to level 30. I mean, you don't need to run a dungeon at level 10.
Yeah, and I think that would be an interesting compromise, because like, they did that in the past. Like, you didn't have access to certain dungeons. Because, like, don't forget, back in ye olden days, there wasn't a raid finder or dungeon finder. You went to the place and found a meeting stone, and you had to be an appropriate level to survive in that zone long enough to get to that place. So that was sort of almost like baked in, right? So,
I don't know.
I think that's actually not a terrible idea. I think that's having sort of like, maybe you limit when they can get into that first dungeon. Maybe not a bad idea. Maybe give them some time to learn the class and learn the game a little bit more mechanically beyond those 10 levels. So, but I think that's it, unless there's anything else you want to add, good sir.
Only that the other thing we could possibly consider is the idea of training wheels for your character if you've never leveled a character before. And okay, that's something that we could talk about. Like, for instance, where you'd have more restrictions on dungeons you could run and stuff because this is literally your first time in WoW versus, you've got 13, level 60 characters. Go ahead and run it at level 10. I don't know. That's one idea. Just.
Yeah. And as Red points out, Final Fantasy 14 does exactly the opposite and throws you into it makes you enter a dungeon as a small level toon, but in a safe scenario with NPCs, so that it teaches you sort of how things are going to go. Maybe they extend that, because you're talking about the level 10 dungeon. Maybe they figure out a different way to make that a little more viable for the other ones, or maybe they generate a scenario that leverages it. Who knows? I got nothing otherwise. So, but Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast for the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you, Joe. Also, by the way, guys, since we didn't mention it during the podcast, this last weekend we did the most recent episode of our D&D podcast, which Joe is DMing for us. I don't know if that's up on the site yet, or it'll be going up this week, most likely. But that happened, and you should go listen to it. It was fun. We had a good time. We beat an evil clown god. If you want to hear that, if you want to just hear the various players' reactions to the evil clown god, quite frankly, it's worth that right there. But yeah, if you have a question for us here at the Blizzard Watch podcast, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for the show, or hit us up on Discord on our Patreon Q and podcast questions channel or our Q questions channel, and we will look there for questions as well. Thank you guys so much for being here with us. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast, and we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.